true believers, this is Head Speaks, a proud member of the Headcast Network family of shows. As usual, I am your host, Aaron Moss, a.k.a. Brother Head. And this is my, well, mostly monthly Headcast, where I talk about comics, movies, role-playing games, TV shows, and anything else geeky that I want. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I manage to con a guest onto the show. So if you like comic books like Firestorm and the Atom, or movies like Back to the Future, or even the Star Wars sequels, or anything else geeky, this is the place for you. So let's get the flux capacitor fluxing, the TARDIS tarting, and let's say Shazam! On with this episode of Head Speaks.
To right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
And welcome, dear listeners, to this episode of Head Speaks. I believe we're on episode 64, if I'm not mistaken. So let's go ahead and start this episode.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is...
What's in Head Long Box?
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace. Mankind.
On this episode of What's in Head's Long Box, we are going to look at Power of the Atom number 5. That's right, we're going to continue our coverage. So here's some information on it. The cover date was December of 1988. The on sale date, August the 30th of 1988. Cover price was $1. The title of this was Comings and Goings. It was 22 pages long. It was written by Roger Stern, penciled by Dwayne Turner, inked by Keith Stan Wilson, letterer Bill Oakley, colorist Nancy Houlihan, editor Mike Carlin. The cover was done by Keith Stan Wilson. And here are some comments from Mike's Amazing World of Comics, the same place I got the above information from. Oberon claims in this issue that the Justice League is currently in space after Mr. Miracle was kidnapped. However, this can't be accurate since half the team stayed on Earth for a time, then went to Apocalypse with Oberon. Also, this story takes place after Superman number 24, as it makes reference to the resignation of Senator Forrest. Now, as I did last time, I'm going to jump directly into the story and talk about it as I give the synopsis at the same time instead of doing them differently as I used to, you know, doing the synopsis and then talking about it. We're just going to do it all one time. So let's get started. As usual, we'll start with the cover. As I mentioned at the end of last episode, I talked a little bit about this cover. It's got the Power of the Atom logo on the top. We've got the elongated man on the phone with the atom popping out of it. The elongated man's neck is trolled up like a phone line, like a phone cord. I say that and I realize that any kids listening to this may not know what the heck I'm talking about, but it is what it is. In fact, they've got a phone cord there you can reference. We get the atom growing out of the phone going, "Person to person for Mr. Ralph Digby." Dibby. Dibney? I keep on calling him Digby, but it's Dibney. Again, person to person, that's something older people would understand that newer people may not understand at this point. And then we get Ralph doing a great, I guess that's Ralph Crampton. Hamna, 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 hamna. Which again, Ralph Crampton is from the Honeymooners again. And old. Actually, they remade it here a decade or so ago with Cedric the Entertainer or somebody, I believe. But that's another story entirely. Also in the bottom corner, we have a little circle with Maxwell Lord. And there's a little arrow pointing at him. And from the pages of the Justice League, Maxwell Lord. Sweetie, baby, let's do lunch. Very 80s, very Wall Street type, very businessman. Great cover overall. Like I said, the background, there's no background per se. It's just a yellow screen, a page behind Ralph and Ray, but it's a great cover. I love the elongated man. He's a great character. I love when he shows up. And I'm doing this, you know I love the Atom. So yeah, it's just a great cover. So our story starts out with Ray sitting in the office of Everett Bailey, the main guy at the CIA, the one that's been showing up in the last four issues. And Bailey comes walking in and drops his papers as he sees Ray sitting on his phone. The Atom? He's like, "Morning, Mr. Bailey." And I love this pose of the Ray's got. He's in his full superhero costume as he's sitting on the handset of the phone. The handset of the phone and the phone itself. It's just a great image of this guy coming in. Again, he's supposed to be, as it says here, he's the most secure office in the country. Third only to the White House and the Pentagon. And here we have the Atom just sitting on his phone like nobody business. And the Atom, ever the gentleman, jumps up and tries to help him pick up the papers. He apologizes for startling him. But he's like, I thought you had the phone had to be off the hook, or, you know, had to be an open line for you to travel over it. Oh, he does, but I didn't hear my phone. I came through the air conditioning ducts. Oh, well, that's quite resourceful. As he's thinking, I'll have to get that ductwork sealed. Because, again, he doesn't like the Atom sneaking in upon him. Because, again, as we're going to find out, Mr. Bailey here's got some secrets. And he's, I guess what the kids would say, he's as shady as F. But, again, Atom, again, apologizes for barging in on him. But he wanted to get back to him because, again, he's been talking to the CIA about giving up the life of Ray Palmer, getting a new identity, going into hiding, in quotes, getting a secret identity back once again. But after his conversations with Carter last issue and Shira, he decided not to take him up on the offer. So he's basically letting Bailey know here. And again, Bailey is very much not liking that idea. He's like, well, we can do this. Well, you know, listen to this other guy here. Like, what's his name? Stevens. Stevens, tell him about the big mistake he's making. Tell him what we can do for him. And he's just trying to do everything he can to get Ray to join up with him. But Ray's already, he's not here to discuss the matter. He's here to let him know that, you know, he's already made up his mind and he's not doing it. And as Bailey keeps talking to him, trying to, you know, spin his magic and try to spin some, you know, get him to stay somehow, Ray's like, "You mind if I use your phone? Oh, you can have my car if you want. Just listen to reason." And he's like, as the guys are talking, he's like, "Yeah, hello? Yes, this is the Atom. Yes, I understand. I'll hold." And he's like, "I appreciate the trouble you guys have gone to, but I can't see myself doing this." And he's like, "Stevens, hold the phone for me." And he jumps into it, shrinks down, and disappears. He says, "You know, if you ever need me, no matter where I'm at across the world, I'm a phone call away. Goodbye." And again, I love that. I love when Ray jumps into the phone and shrinks down and disappears. I love when we see, you know, he's standing at a 6-foot height behind him. And then we see him shrinking down as he disappears into the phone line. It's just fantastic. And after Ray vanishes, Mr. Bailey, Everett, gets real upset. And he's like, "Oh, damn," slams the phone down. And he's all upset. He's like, "How could he do this? Selfish, small-minded." And Stevens is like, "You should have anticipated this. He's always been a free agent. He's worked for Spore in the past, but it's always just been, you know, him helping out. Just because everyone knows who he is." And Bailey's just, he's like, "Can it, Stevens?" "I say can it. When I want your opinion, I'll ask for them. Now get out of here. I got to think." And as Stevens leaves, he overhears Bailey mumbling to himself about free agents. "I don't believe this. After all the trouble it took to set up Fireball." And Stevens is like, "Fireball? Operation Fireball? But that was a Brazilian project, I thought." And again, as we remember, it's not really made too clear much more of this issue, but we'll find out more later. If you remember right, Brazilian jungles is where Ray was living with his tiny people until some loggers or some strip miners or whatever came through and accidentally burnt the place down. So maybe there's more than we thought going on. But I do like this. Like I say, it's been going on for the last five issues, and they haven't really touched on it much as far as the Operation Fireball, which you just mentioned. But Ray's been dealing with the CIA, and this whole thing has been going on since this series started five issues ago. So I do like the slow burn that it's got building up to what we're going to find out here at some point in the future. I forget when it is, but let's keep reading and find out. Meanwhile, after that's all done and said with, leaves us with that little Operation Fireball. Like, wait a minute, what's this talking about? We cut to the beaches of San Clemente, California. And the same guy, again, I don't think we've found out who he is in the story yet. Again, if you're a longtime reader of The Atom, you may know who he is. But I won't mention it till the end of the issue when they reveal it. But the mysterious man is talking to someone in the CIA office, and he finds out that the Atom turned down Bailey's offer, phoned himself out of there. And he's talking with his manservant, if you will, Ron, telling me, you know, he just talked to a friend at the CIA, and where he found out, you know, he's letting Ron know that he found out that the Atom turned down their job, which makes it easier on him, whatever his plans are. Because if he would have joined up with the CIA for what he has planned, attacking Ray Palmer as a CIA agent, it's going to cause too many questions. Now that he's on his own, it's going to make his job a little easier for what he's got going on here in the near future, actually. And we find out that he's been stalking and researching Ray Palmer for years. And he's like, I know things about him that he's forgotten himself. And Ron's his manservant's like, it seems like, well, an awfully long time to study one man. Given the whole of eternity, it means nothing. Besides, the work of these years will soon pay off. Much to the Atom's dismay. So again, we got a little setup here for what's coming up. Again, the reveals at the end of this issue. When this came out, I knew of the Atom. I knew him from the Super Friends and some from old issues of JLA. I'm sorry, Justice League of America. But I don't think I quite knew who this guy was at this point until they reveal him at the end of the issue. Because again, keep in mind, I just got into comics like a year or so before this. So while I had been a fan of superheroes all my life, reading comics on a regular basis was new for me. So I wasn't quite sure who this guy was at this point because we didn't refer to his name. We didn't get his supervillain name yet, his costume or anything. So I'm like, huh? Who is this guy? And then we cut to the Justice League International. We have Oberon manning the switchboard, if you will, doing on monitor duty. And we get, he's talking to the computer, I guess. There's no kidding. Thanks, computer. I read Hickam Fultz. See what he has to say. As the Atom jumps out of the phone. Hello, one and all. Sorry I haven't been in such sooner, but where is everybody? Hello. And Oberon fell to the floor. He's like, down here, smart guy. Give a fellow some warning, will ya? And Atom, he grows to the same height as Oberon when he helps him up, which kind of impresses Oberon. Because again, Oberon, if you're familiar with the Justice League International book, what are you doing? Go read that book too. It's a good book. And it's also got a great podcast I was going to mention. I'll do it now. But a friend of the show, as I've mentioned numerous times, one of the guys that's kind of helped me start my shows, the Irredeemable Shag has a Justice League International podcast where he talks about this book. So definitely check out Shag's show, check out the book. But first, finish listening to my show. So Oberon he's a co-worker, a teammate, a sidekick, whatever, for Mr. Miracle, another character I love. But he's a dwarf, so he's short, and he's mainly on monitor duty. He doesn't have any powers himself. He helps out Mr. Miracle when needed. So talking to Ray, someone at his own height to this point, it's a good thing for him because, you know, he's usually looking up to people. This time he talks to somebody, you know, looking him in the eye. And again, he's like, hey, you grew to my height. I didn't know you could do that. And Atom tells him the same thing that we've discovered over the last few issues, that his size control has improved. He's still adjusting it to himself. And he's like, I'm still adjusting it to myself, Oberon. No, mister, just Oberon. Let me say it's a pleasure to meet you, Dr. Palmer. Do you have an idea how seldom I get a chance to stand on my own 2 feet and look someone square in the eye? And Ray's like, I'll make an educated guess, but if you pardon my asking, who are you and where's everybody? This is the new headquarters of the Justice League, isn't it? And so Oberon tells him this is Justice League International. Right now it's Justice League. It should be international. It should be interplanetary, though, because the Justice League is off in space. And again, this happens over in Justice League International 15, where part of the team, actually, not the whole team, goes off to space to help rescue Mr. Miracle. And again, Ray hasn't heard of any of these characters. Scott Free, referring to the shopping network, which is going on. He doesn't know about any of that. So And we also see on the monitor board the membership role. We see Guy Gardner, Rocket Red, Green Flame, John Jones, Booster Gold, Mr. Miracle, Batman, Ice Maiden, Captain Atom, Blue Beetle. And Ray's looking at the board like, I know Batman and Johns, but I don't know the rest of these people. Who are these guys? And who is Captain Atom? What, I'm gone for a few months and someone steals my name? And Oberon's like, that's a long story. So again, real quick, just briefly on this. It seems like he should know Guy Gardner, because Guy, I don't remember if he was in the Justice League at any point or showed up, but I mean, he was a hero before Ray left, if I'm not mistaken. And Green Flame was also a heroine, but she was with the Global Guardians, and I don't know if they operated so much in the United States, so I could see him not knowing her. Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, and Booster Gold are all imports from the Charlton universe, so their history with the other heroes at this point is kind of in the air. So apparently he didn't meet any of those characters. So I do like, he's like, who are all these people? And Captain Atom, again, that's a long story. He had his own book at this time. He was a member of the Justice League. Definitely an interesting character. Like I said, he was a Charlton character that DC acquired, and he's gone over some changes. They've done some stuff with his origins. Definitely check out Captain Atom's book. And another friend of mine, Jay Jones, has a Silver and Gold podcast where they look at Captain Atom and Booster Gold. Those books. So go ahead and take a look. Listen to Jay's podcast. He's a great guy. He's got some great podcasts. But let's get back on my show. About this time, Maxwell Lord comes in. Maxwell Lord was the operations manager, I guess you could say, of the Justice League International. He kind of wormed himself in, weaseled his way in. He's very slimy, very much of a car salesman, if you will. He's like, Ray Palmer, I read your book, loved it, da-da-da. You know, he's doing all the handshaking, kissing up. And again, as he says, the Atom is a member of the original guard. Well, not original member, but he was early on. So he was a member of the original Justice League, basically, before all the crap went down. They disbanded and reformed as a JLI. So he definitely wants to try to get Ray on board. And to me, he's just as bad. Maybe not quite as bad, we'll find out. But he's just as slimy as Bailey is over the CIA. He says whatever he can to try to impress people and to try to get Ray to join up with the new Justice League International. As he says here, it's going to be great to have you back in the league. You know, you're a real spiritual father to the current team. And again, even though he hasn't even asked Ray if he wants to join, he's automatically assuming, you're going to rejoin and you're going to be a member of the team. Ray's like, that's very flattering, but I just dropped by to say hi. And he's like, Oberon, when the JLI returns, tell John he can reach me through Norman Browler in Ivytown. Thanks. And Max, again, as Ray's even leaving, Max doesn't give up. He's like, don't go. I want you to think this place is your home. And Ray's like, goodbye, gentlemen. I'll find my way out. But, and Oberon's like, don't press the man, Max. And and Ray's out the front door, and Max is still, Adams, perhaps you haven't considered all the advantages. Goodbye, Mr. Lord. And he says here, how did a sleazy number like him get connected to the JLI? This certainly isn't the league that I knew. And again, the Justice League at this time, the Justice League International, was, as Giffen and DeMatteis was writing it, it was more of a humor comic book. It was a lot more humorous. All the characters acted more humorous than they did in their own books. And their own books are more, in quote, serious, like Ray is in his book. But when you're in the Justice League book, especially as a member of the team, I guess it's written in the rules somewhere, I guess, that you have to be a, in quotes, funnier character. You've got to be more humorous, more slapstick. So that's kind of what Ray's commenting on here. And we'll get more of that in future issues, if I'm not mistaken. But as he leaves, then we get a bunch of more reporters. They're wondering what's going on with the Justice League, because the Justice League has been seen recently. And again, Ray reduces his weight down to nothing and jumps, lands, and swings on a phone pole to get out of there. And as he's flying away or swinging away, he's like, almost makes me wish I stayed in Brazil. No, don't even think that. So I love the dialogue as it's written in this book. It's fantastic. It's just, and again, the artwork's also superb. I mean, as I keep saying, I love when he's swinging on the light pole there, the way
motion line shows him swinging around. And then the next panel down here on page 9, he's swinging around that other pole. And we see, you know, the motion lines of him swinging and him leaping to the pole. It's just fantastic artwork. And again, I love the writing in here. It's fantastic. And I like the transition here where he's thinking, you know, well, does the Justice League normally get this much media, or are they watching for me? Let's not get paranoid. It's like he says, no one's watching me. As we cut to page 10 at the top here, our mystery villain, we'll call him, is doing push-ups, watching the Atom on TV as he's finishing his in quotes press conference, telling the press nothing as he flies away. I just like that. It's a neat transition. And again, the man is saying that, you know, you can always count the meat to stay on a man's tail. I mean, here it is, 2022. You still have the same, in quotes, problem with the media. Once they get an idea for a story, they stick with it, even if it is invading people's rights or privacy or whatever it is. It's just, again, not to slam the media, but they can be a little pressing when they want to be. So, and again, like I say, we haven't mentioned who this guy is yet in the story-wise. So I know who it is because I read the story. At the time, I don't remember if I knew who this was, as I said. But we get this guy talking, and he's saying how he's glad that the Atom didn't join the Justice League because they could be, he says, strange and unpredictable.
And then he turns to his servant or whatever he is, Ron, and he's like, do you know what this means, Ron? And Ron's like, our timetable can be moved up, sir? Yes. Just in the Atom's time is just about run out as he's pinning a glove on. And so maybe spoiler, I don't know. We'll see. He's putting a white glove on and he's talking about how the Atom's time has just run out. If you put this all together and you're familiar with the Atom's past comics, you may be able to figure out who this is if you don't know yet. Like I've said several times, I don't remember offhand if I knew this was back when I first read this book. So let's go ahead and move on. So we cut to a diner where we have Ray. He's in a coat and a hat pulled down over his head to kind of hide his identity, thinking about how maybe he needs to grow a beard and change the way he looks a little bit more. Because again, he says a hat pulled down isn't a good disguise. I don't know. I know the Thing's pulled it off for many years over at Marvel. I know the Thing, Ben Grimm, over in the Fantastic Four, a lot of times walk around with a trench coat and a hat pulled down over his head, try to hide his identity. So if it can work for the Thing, Ray, it can work for you, buddy. But I do. He's reading the paper as he's thinking about this, and he's reading the paper about a story about how Ralph and Sue caught some bad guys, and Ray said they're wondering, you know, how he wonders how Ralph's dealt with it for all these years, how he likes being a celebrity, which is kind of introducing our guest for this issue. Again, these first couple issues is kind of like last issue and this issue, maybe next issue, is a celebrity guest appearance bonanza, I guess. And again, they would do this, especially back in the 80s. They would do that a lot in the early issues. They would bring in some other characters to help legitimize the character. I don't know if the Atom needs it so much because he is the Atom, but it's what they did back then. And the paper that he's reading, the headlines is talking about Forrest resigns, or resigns. Apparently this is a reference to, what is it, Superman 24. Senator Forrest was resigning in that issue. So I like the tie. It's not a big red flag. Hey, pay attention to this. It's not even a mention of where it's at, but they do have this reference on the newspaper. It's just a newspaper headline in the paper that Ray's reading, that if you're reading the rest of the DCU at the time and you're reading like the Superman books, you go, hey, I recognize that. So I do think that's a nice touch. I don't know if that was the writer or the artist or who threw that on there as the headline for the paper, but I do think that's a very nice touch to to tie this into the DC universe. It shows that it's the DC universe. It's connected. It's sometimes you'd see that. Sometimes it wouldn't be as good. Sometimes I know, like I've talked about on some of my shows, like things that John Ostrander wrote over my Suicide Squad, my Task Force X podcast. He would do that quite a bit. The books he wrote, he would tie things in together, bring characters or make mentions to his other books. So it's nice. In fact, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, as I'm thinking about the other books they write, this was written by Roger Stern, who I think may have been writing Superman at the time. Huh, that's interesting. In fact, I'm going to, at Mike's Amazing World, I'm going to take a look. And yes, Roger Stern was writing that issue, was writing Superman at the time. Superman 24 is written by Roger Stern and penciled by Cary Gamble. So, and this, I guess, was leading up to Superman the Exile storyline, which was a great storyline. But let me see real quick, just if you didn't read the Superman books, apparently Senator Forrest was campaigning for president, who was being backed by Lex Luthor. But apparently it's gotten out that he's had some dirty dealings. And let me see real quick. Apparently Rampage is being used to settle a score of four. So it doesn't really say much in here about Forrest resigning, at least in the synopsis on Mike's Amazing World. But Senator Forrest was in the Superman books at this time, written by Roger Stern. So again, so that's why there was that mention. So I'm thinking that it probably was Roger Stern, now that I piece this a little bit together as I'm talking about it. I'm sure it was Roger that threw that bit in there to tie it in with, again, the other books he wrote. And I do like when they do that, because again, it shows a larger DC universe at work. Which, I love the continuity between books, and I'm a big continuity fan when done right. Yes, continuity can be a burden, and it can be problematic, but done right, I like it. And this is a nice touch of continuity here, I think. But anyways, enough about the Superman books, which we're not talking about. For more on Superman, please see From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast hosted by Mike Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor. It's a great, great show. Anyways, back to my show. So again, we got to a hotel where Ralph and Sue are registered, and Ray's showing up there, and he's, you know, I guess he's trying to find out about him. But again, a good hotel, an upscale hotel, they value the privacy of their guests, and they don't want to tell this guy who they don't know for sure who he is, which room they're in or anything. So he's like, if you want to leave a message, he's like, at least tell him I'm here. I'm an old friend. And all of a sudden, someone taps Ray on the shoulder. Ray Palmer, hey, stranger, what brings you these parts? And we see Ralph was sitting in a chair by the front door. And he's still sitting in the chair, or the bench, or whatever it is, as he stretched out to greet Ray. And again, I love Ralph Digby. He's a great character. I know he showed up in The Flash the last season or two before he went away. Due to, I don't know how much of it was story leaving and how much of it was problems with the actor, but anyways, that's another story entirely. We'll let someone talking about The Flash deal with that. But so we get Ralph taking Ray outside to see Sue, and as he's walking out, Ralph is very much a, I don't want to say comedian per se, but he likes the spotlight. So as he's walking, I mean, he can walk out normally and people probably wouldn't recognize him, but as he walks out, he's got his neck all stretched out, and some kids like, Mom, Dad, look at the pencil neck. And so as they're getting their car again, he could just hand the money to the guy, the tip to the guy, the valet. But instead, he gets in the car and he reaches, stretches his arm across and hands the valet the tip. And his name's Raul. Raul's like, weird guy, but a great tipper. So again, Roger's writing Ralph very well in here. Very, to my opinion, very much how Ralph was at the time. Kind of the Joker, the comedian, not the Joker from Batman or the comedian from Watchmen. Damn them. They've taken all the good words for funny people and turned them into bad guys. Funny man. Oh, well, that was from Reservoir Dogs. Anyways, let's move on. So Ralph's telling Adam how they could probably use his help. They're looking for bird smugglers. And I like this. As they're talking, Ray's like, smugglers, huh? What are they smuggling? Ralph's like, birds. You know, I read your book. And Ray's like, you and half the world. whoops, did I hit a nerve? Because again, as we've noticed from the last four issues, Ray's secret identity and revealing in the book, in hindsight, may have not been the greatest choice, seeing how he needed to come back and reclaim his life. So, and as they're driving out to the marina to meet Sue, Ray's kind of questioning Ralph about, you know, how he does it, how, you know, he lives this, in quotes, celebrity lifestyle, being a superhero with a known identity. And Ralph sums it up. He's like, I'm a big show-off. I've always enjoyed the attention, which again, that helps a lot. I mean, if you like the attention, if you like the spotlight being on you, then yeah, having your secret identity known is a good thing. You get more camera time, you get more, you know, more press. And if that's your thing, you know, hey, can't go wrong. But if you're not into that, yeah, having your secret identity exposed can be a bit problematic, I guess. And then Ray asks him something that's going to come up later in the issue, if I'm not mistaken. I read this a couple days ago, so I'm trying to remember now. But I'm pretty sure this is a callback later on. Ray's like, well, doesn't the constant questioning from reporters ever get to you? And Ralph's like, yeah, sometimes that's when I go for the low profile. And then as they come to the dock again, Ralph stretching his neck out going, honey, I'm home, and look who I brought. And Sue's like, Ray, how are you? Did Ralph tell you we read your... And Ralph's all, ixnay on the ook bay. pig Latin, never goes out of style. I love that. And so Ray's kind of catching the elongated team up on what's going on. Said he phoned himself down to Florida to get some advice on how to be a public superhero from Ralph. And again, as they're traveling, Sue's like, are you sure you want advice from a man who does such a wretched impression of Ricky Ricardo? In the back of the boat, Ralph's taking his coat off going, Babaloo! Again, Ricky Ricardo from the I Love Lucy show. Again, kids nowadays, if they're reading this, I don't know if kids are reading this book, but if you're a kid nowadays reading, you're like, Ricky Ricardo, who is that? So I love the things in here, the comments that kind of place it in a certain time period. I kind of like that. I mean, some people complain about that when it happens in certain things. I kind of like it, pinning it down to a certain time frame. It just makes it more realistic, I guess, makes it more relatable. So Ray's going along to help them on their mission, and Ralph tells him, oh, won't you shrink into your atom duds? And as he does so, Ray just changes costume right there without changing size. And Ralph's like, well, excuse me, Mr. Quick Change. New threads, I take it? And Ray's like, yep, one size fits all. And Ralph's like, ouch. Okay, time to cut the kidding. Here's my plan. And so as they're cruising up to the boat, Ralph's kind of explained the plan that they're going to basically Sue's going to ride up and be the, you know, she's a beautiful woman. These are guys on the ship. So, of course, you add two together. You get horn dogs basically paying attention to the hot brunette in the boat over the side of the boat. And she pulls up, ahoy, yourself, good looking. What you doing out there all alone? I think I got lost. Can you show me the way to the Biscay? I'm probably mispronouncing that. And so Ralph's still narrating the plan as the plan's going on. And Ralph tells Ray that his plan is for Ray to shrink into the ship and open a portal so they can go in. And Ray's like, how would you got in without me? Oh, I was going to sneak in through the engine housing. This way was a lot less messy. And so they're sneaking in, Ray again, down to his like 1-inch size or whatever. And Ralph is stretching himself out to be inconspicuous, I guess. And again, I like here on the bottom of page 14, they're going to behind a door that they hear Ralph's nose is telling them there's something behind. And again, Ralph, if you're not familiar with the elongated man, one of his shticks is whenever there's a mystery or something weird going on, his nose twitches. And I like in other issues of Ralph's been in, I forget which one it was now, there's been comments about it. I know Ralph has, you know, said that Sue loves it. She says, hey, you think, or something like that. But it's an ongoing thing with Ralph that his nose twitches whenever there's a mystery on, basically. And so here on the bottom of page 14, Ralph is stretching himself thin so he can go through the slats on this door while the Atom just crawls in because he's so small. And they find the rare parrot they're looking for because, again, it's got a, he can smell overripe fruit, wet feathers and guano. And again, right here on the top of page, what is this? Page 15. I guess that would be the next page in order. He's like, birds. They're actually smuggling birds. Ralph, you get involved in some of the craziest schemes. And Ralph's like, there's nothing screwy about trying to halt the illegal import of endangered species. So again, I like Ralph and Sue. They're great characters. Sadly, in the future, they have some bad things happen to them, which we're not going to talk about because that's not our concern, because it doesn't happen on the Adam's watch. But as they're talking, one of the guards busts in. He's like, keep those hands right. Say, hey, what about another guy? And Ralph's like, other guy? What other guy? And the guy's like, there was another guy standing next to you just a second ago. You're imagining things. There's nobody but here. Nobody here but you and me. Don't hand me that. I saw him plain as, cut that out. And Ralph starts wiggling his body because, again, he's basically, in quotes, has no bones. I mean, he's like Plastic Man or Mr. Fantastic. He's moving all over the place, wavering. The guy's like, you're stretching all over the place. That ain't natural. And he's like, stretching? Moi? Your eye must be going bad. Maybe you need glasses. Careful with that gun. You don't want to hurt the birds. And so he's distracted the guy as Ray runs up underneath the guy and does what he normally does. He jumps up at the guy, and as he jumps, again, at this point he's light as a feather, but as he jumps, he gives all his weight back to his body, so he's able to knock the guy into the solar plexus and knocks him down. Out into the hallway where another guy comes running up. What the? Charlie, yo, we got trouble down here. And Ralph's fist, as large as ever, comes flying out the door. Oh, shut up, as he punches the guy and knocks him out with his elongated fist. elongated fist. Anyways. So, I like here on page 617, where we get the middle panel. We got all these guys running down the hall because these creeps, you know, blurted out that someone's there. And so, they got people coming down to help. And again, as they come running up, Ralph comes out the door, his head stretching all over, his neck stretching all over the place. And one of the guys like, look out, it's that freak, the Lopin' Man. And Ralph's like, it's the elongated man, if you please, or even if you don't. And another guy's like, hey, another one. Hey, it's that guy from the book. And Ray's like, I don't believe it. I never would have taken you for a reader. If everyone's read my book, why are my royalties bigger? Of course, you probably stole a copy, didn't you? So again, you wouldn't be doing this in real life because you'd be too busy fighting. But that's one thing I love about the superhero books and the superhero movies is that they're able to wisecrack as they're beating up the bad guys. That's just classic superhero 101. It's fantastic. Again, Ray, you know, he's beating up all these bad guys, worrying about his book royalties, and maybe you just stole a book, which is probably true. And then Ralph stretches himself out real big and just wraps himself around the guys and to capture the rest of them. And one of the guys, his Ralph is elongating himself, making himself bigger to basically like a big blanket. One of the guys like, oh my Lord. And so Ray starts to run up the stairs, but there's a goon up there with a gun that starts firing down at him. And he's thinking about the last issue, how the other day he was having a little soiree with Hawkman, Hawkwoman. And it's not quite as, he thinks this is not quite as interesting as what happened with Hawkman, Hawkwoman. I guess it depends on your take. Maybe, you know, if you're a big bird person, maybe this is more interesting. I don't know. I like it. But anyway, but as he starts to run up, a gun starts firing. And again, he's like, well, if I'd stayed small, I wouldn't have seen such a target. Or I wouldn't have been such a big target. It's true. If you'd been small, it would have taken him longer to get there. But yeah, it would have been easier, harder for the guy to shoot at him. But again, Ray being Ray. And again, I love the fact here that they're not afraid to give us exposition, let us know what's going on. Ray jumps up to the ceiling, and it says here, with a mere thought, the atom draws on the white dwarf matter in his uniform, shifting more of its enormous mass from the extra-dimensional space it normally occupies, and paying that mass for the tiniest fraction of a second behind a single punch, behind a single devastating punch as he hits the floor where the guy that was shooting at him at breaks the floor, and the guy, like, what the heck? Sounds like a bomb went off down there. There's no smoke, there's no fire. What could have done that? And Ray appears behind him. He's like, Guy could have. I also take exception to people who shoot at me. And he just kicks the guy in the back and kicks him down to the floor, knocking him out. Again, I love just the action in this book. And then basically the story ends, or this portion of the story ends with Ralph and Sue and Ray having dinner, reading the paper where it says the Long Gay Man and his wife team up to break a smuggling ring. And Sue's like, well, I don't understand why you insisted on saying out the story. You're part of the capture as I was, or more so. And Ray's like, oh, nonsense. You did most of the legwork, created a diversion, contacted the Coast Guard. I was just for the ride. Plus, you know, publicity is the last thing I need. And some kid comes running up. He's like, excuse me, Mr. Dibby, Mrs. Dibby, can I have your autographs? And the kid's like, sure, I think I could squeeze you in, sport. What's your name? Davey. And Davey looks over at Ray. He's like, are you anybody, mister? Ray's like, me? Nah, no one important. He's like, he's glad the kid didn't recognize him. He's like, but did I have to be so thorough, though? And so basically, as I thought earlier, the callback, he says he's going to play it cool and low-key. And they toast him. This calls for a toast to Mr. Low-key. Long may he wave. And so this main story ends here with Ray, you know, and Ralph celebrating the fact that Ray is going to try to have a low-key life so he can keep his personal life personal, I guess. Then we cut to a next day photo where we have a newspaper clipping showing showing Ralph and Sue having drinks with some third party. He's not named in the article, but we have someone looking at a magnifying glass and the person recognizes it as Palmer. We cut back and we show it's the guy from earlier with the white glove. I was wearing the white glove earlier. He's still in his PJs or whatever. And Ron brings in a trunk. It's the rest of his gear. And we get a little bit more here of a monologuing. The guy's like, our friend the Atom is following a new track, Ron. He has taken to hiding in plain sight. An ingenious strategy. It should allow him to escape normal public notice. But anyone who truly knows Palmer will be able to track him down. He will achieve at best only an illusion of privacy. We must watch him closely now, Ron, and be prepared to strike when he's most vulnerable. Ah, perfect fit. And then we cut to the next page, which is the last page of the story, where we have Ron holding up a costume. And again, if you're a longtime Atom fan, you'll recognize this as Cronus' costume. And Ron's like, what should we do with your old working clothes? He's like, take it away. I never want to see it again. Well, second thought, give it here. And so Ron hands the Cronus costume to our, in quotes, mystery villain. And he talks about how he's kind of embarrassed to admit he ever wore a ridiculous costume like that. He acted like a clown. He dressed like one, but no more. The costume belongs to the past, the dead past, as he uses his powers. Well, we're going to find out who it is now. Cronus, the master of time, to make the costume age and just go into tatters and nothingness. We have a nice reveal here at the last bottom quarter or more of the page. And he's saying, the Atom always defeated the costume thief, but he'll be no match for Cronus, the master of time. And so we have Cronus, which is a longtime Atom foe, finally revealed, standing here in his new costume. This is the new Cronus. He's got like a green tunic on with an hourglass in the middle. Kind of reminiscent of the Challenge of the Unknown to me. Green pants with green boots, wearing a pair of glasses, not wearing a mask anymore. Because again, he used to have like a white mask with hands of a clock on it, I guess. But now he's more, again, he's kind of going for more of a in quotes, realistic costume, like a lot of shows do nowadays and movies. They seem not like this whole superhero concept of a costume for the most part. And so he's kind of thrown out the costume, and he's got more of a working suit, if you will. Which, again, I like Cronus. Again, I wasn't super familiar with him. I knew of him, and I was a little familiar with him. Wasn't super familiar with him, but I do like Cronus, and I do like how he's showing up here. He's, you know, taking the last three, four issues, whatever it was, to reveal who he is. But they're revealing with a new costume, and again, very dramatic fashion. I'm just surprised they didn't give him a font for his name, Cronus, because usually when they announce themselves like that, there's some sort of special font for their name. He doesn't have one as of yet, at least. But then we hear at the very bottom, we got a blurb. Whatever you do, don't miss our next issue. Again, another great issue of The Power of the Atom. Again, I really loved this series when it came out. Well, again, the Atom is one of my two favorite characters, I've said, so very nice. And so the next issue box talks about how Cronus, the Master of Time, makes his move. He's one of the Atom's oldest and most desperate foes. So, again, can't wait to read that. But overall, again, I really enjoyed this. I thought that, again, the penciler, the inker, the colorist all did a great job. And again, Roger Stern on the writing is fantastic. I love some Roger Stern. We also have here in the next issue box, or the letter column, There's a special announcements box where it tells us that this is Dwayne Turner's last issue as the penciler. His outside artistic commitments have been too much, so he can't do another 22-page book in the meantime. So he's going to leave and do other projects. And so they let us know that next issue will feature the guest pencils of John Byrne. So John Byrne is teaming up with Roger Stern, who I guess he used to write Captain America back in the day. And then it tells us that, again, they're building towards this one since issue one of the Power of the Atom. More to that next issue. And Power of the Atom 7 starts Graham Nolan will be the regular penciler. So, again, we got two more issues before we get to the Graham Nolan, the regular penciler, the new regular penciler. Again, I like some John Byrne. John Byrne, his faces can sometimes be very similar in style, so he can be hit or miss sometimes. But overall, I like John Byrne, especially at this time frame. So, should be a good issue next month. So, anyways, what do you guys think? Go ahead and let us know. Send us an email to head@headcastnetwork.com. I can read your comments on the air. We also have we also have a phone number you can call. You can leave a message at the Headcast voicemail. That is area code 559-500-3182. Again, that phone number is area code 559-500-3182. You can call, leave a message, let me know what show it's for. I'll read it on the air, or I'll play it on the air, actually. Read it. I'll play it on the air. Check out the website, which is headcastnetwork.com. Let us know what you think about the show. Also, before I sign off, I do want to do...
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
You've got mail.
I don't have any letters or anything else. I don't have a lot of comments or anything from Facebook. But I do want to say, if you like what I'm doing here, please check out patreon.com. I have a Patreon set up. It's patreon.com/headcastnetwork, of course. And I did want to give special mention to the two gentlemen over there who are contributing to the show right now. The first one is Mark Ross, a.k.a. Cluck Trent. He's been a Patreon for the last month or two or so. I want to thank you very much for joining us. And also recently joined us is Mr. Gene Hendricks. Mean Gene, the podcasting machine. That's it. Sorry, it's been a while since I've heard that. Mean Gene, the podcasting machine himself, is a member of the Headspeaks or Headcast Network Patreon. So thank you both very much for joining us. Again, if you like what I'm doing on here or any of my shows, head over to patreon.com/headcastnetwork. Join Mark and Gene. So a few bucks in the tin, help us out over here. And, you know, if I get enough guys, maybe I can quit my job and do this full time. Oh, that'd be wonderful. Anyways, but I do want to mention that. And I do want to thank everyone else that's on the Facebook group. Again, I don't have a lot on there, but again, I don't do a lot of promoting for it like I probably should. Again, I'm very bad at promoting and doing all that kind of junk. But we do have facebook.com/group/headcastnetwork. Currently, we have 61 members. So if you want to keep up on any of my shows, come check us out. You can join up the group and have some conversations on there with others. But that is going to do it. That's going to end it for this episode. Let me know what you think, and we'll talk at you next month when we look at Power of the Atom 6 with guest penciler John Byrne. Until next month, remember,
Head has spoken.
Thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of Head Speaks. Hope you enjoyed it. If so, let me know. Drop me an email to head@headspeaks.com or visit our home at head.headspeaks.com. You can also visit and talk with me on Facebook and Google+, both under Head Speaks. You can also send an MP3 file with your thoughts and I can play that on the air.
You can also get more of me on my other podcasts. Be sure to listen to Task Force X, where monthly I look at John Ostringer's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics from the 80s and early 90s. Also, over on G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, my podcasting friends, Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, along with myself, are looking at all of the G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero comics, and related titles from Marvel and IDW. All of my headcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher, along with the respective blogs and my main page at headspeaks.com. All comments, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Head Speaks are owned wholly by the speaker of said comments and do not express the opinions of Head Speaks, unless, of course, I'm the one making the comments. Head Speaks, Task Force X, and G.I. Joe, Real American Headcast, are all part of the Headcast family. So join us next month for another wonderful episode of Head Speaks. Until then, I'll see you in the funny pages. Good night.